From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around this culture of love, helping one another as local business people, as entrepreneurs, as venture capitalists, as people who are trying to build a better mousetrap, drive the economy. And today on the show, I have my business partners, Rick and Ali. And I'm excited about today's show. We've been talking about this the last few days because in our world, things are happening fast. But I want to pick up on our last show. We did a show last month where we talked about some of what we are working on, but my thesis around, you know, the fact that we can solve a lot of America's worries with financial worries in terms of our economy by driving great technology and productivity, and predominantly through AI. So with that said, maybe I'll frame that a little bit. America's got roughly $37 trillion in debt, and we're running a deficit of a couple trillion a year, which is just not sustainable. And it's sort of the talk of Wall Street, or you turn on a financial show these days, they're always talking about what are we going to do about the debt? And we do this big, beautiful bill and it's still doesn't balance the budget. And so people are unhappy and for a lot of reasons. And, you know, there's a lot of things in that bill that are actually good for technology. And so what's going on with what we're working on here at the Growth Factory, and how do I see us really at the heart of the solution? And my thesis that productivity will be gained in a big way by AI and artificial intelligence, and we're seeing it happen right before our very eyes. So with that said, maybe I'll have Ali and Rick sort of jump in, introduce themselves, and maybe provide some perspective on how they view things. Rick, you want to start, or Ali?
Sure, yeah, it's great to be on this next episode. I think we got some great feedback on the last one, so let's give the people what they want, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, I think what you said, Mark, is really important. And, you know, you can complain or you can create, right? And how are we going to create the future? Not be fearful of it, but to create it, and not create like the logo on Ali's shirt there, which is a portfolio company.
Create.
And yeah, we're excited about that and where it's going. But how do we create the future? And I think it's really important what you're framing, Mark, because most people have been thinking about the technology piece, right? Like, oh, we're going to have these amazing tools. They're already, you know, ChatGPT has become the new Google as far as a verb, right? And so people are thinking technology, and maybe they think, oh, some of it I have to wait and see, but some of it I'm using today. But they're not thinking about, how does this affect work, the future of work? How do we create the future of work? How does this create a new economy, right? And so the intersection of what we're doing on a daily basis, which is investing in founders who are creating the future, and how we're thinking about fund too, and how do we even create the future of venture, is incredibly exciting. And so, yeah, Ali, maybe, you know, you could share a little bit about, you know, the future of work and some of your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, this topic is really interesting because over the last couple of weeks, you know, we've been to a couple of events together, right? And you're listening to top CTOs and CIOs of, you know, major companies in our region. And when you listen to their level of excitement when they see the basic automation that an AI, you know, can do, and you reflect back on and go, well, if you're excited or you're surprised by an AI that's able to build a website in a matter of seconds, you're missing the point here, because I think it's the point that you're trying to make is the future of work, right? We really have to think about what does that look like. And, you know, in my opinion, as AI becomes more of the productivity tool, the future work is going to change from an org chart of humans managing people to org chart of, you know, people with agents managing productivity. It's just a different way of looking at how we should organize ourselves. And there's an opportunity and there's a threat, right? The opportunity is if you are really bullish around the future of AI and how you want AI to be the productivity tool, you're going to build from ground up. You're going to say, this is how we're going to build for the future. I think that's the right way of thinking about it. But the top-down approach, my fear, when you think about the future of work from the top-down approach, I think the top-down approach is more isolated or siloed tools that they try to figure out how to fit within the current workflow. I think that's the challenge of how we think about future of work. I think we as entrepreneurs, we as mentors and investors and supporters of our community, we need to continue to raise the bar in how people think about AI as productivity versus a tool, as a first principles, as a end result, right? And I think that is that's how I think about it. I think that's how we should think about it and how we should evangelize this within our community, that future of work is a bottoms up AI as your embedded tool to support you in every way. Actually, it should lead your organization with your people becoming empowered to be more productive.
Well, let's talk about this, see if I can frame this as we can break it down a little bit. So big companies are looking at, you know, the big existing companies right now are looking at how to bring AI into their system and, of course, into their companies. And, of course, there's pushback by some employees and embracing it at the higher levels typically. And it's just this adoption curve that's occurring. And then startups are starting AI, like they're building it at their foundation, like with what we're doing at the Growth Factory. So it's really a unique way that it's, you know, so the early stage companies are, it's where they're at for the most part. But the big companies, maybe we can start there. And you and I talked a little bit before the show that a CEO's role might, he or she might have less reports because he or she has more AI agents.
That's right.
Describe what that might look like in a big company.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is really interesting, right? So I'll go back. You made a point, Rick, a couple of days ago when we were talking about this program and you referenced the gold rush. And I'm not going to take that away. I want you to talk about that. But I look at this like when in the 1950s, when the U.S. decided to build highways, it wasn't because they saw cars trending and said, okay, let's go build highways. No, they built highways because they saw the economic opportunity for highways. I look at the future of, you know, Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, big, large corporation to be the same thing. You have to think about this as an economic impact. So what is the economic impact when you look at it from a human resources or on an org chart for a CEO running a major company? I believe that agents will become the toolkit that gets assigned to every employee from the top down. Your first day of work in the future is not, did you get your computer and your password? The first day of work in the future is, did you get your agent toolkit that creates the seamless integration across all departments? So you as an employee, as a contributor, as a productivity agent, is given empowerment to not only make decisions, but actually implement them. What do I mean by that? Fortune 500, if you worked in it, you know that nothing gets done. Too many layers have to see, agree, and ultimately decide if they want to implement. You know, legal has to review, finance has to review, you know, this department, that department. But imagine me as a productivity agent, not as an employee, have a slew of agents that represent the different vertical of inputs and outputs that I need to get my job done. So if my agent knows what the financial element of my impact.
Agents talking to agents, agents is what you're saying. That's yeah. Right. So we're having multiple agents cooperating with one another virtually real time.
Real time. Yeah. So they're taking all the risk out of the work that I need to accomplish to deliver productivity for the company. That's the agents that we're going to be dealing with. And those agents are going to be empowered to be connected to the entire data set of the company. It will understand the limitation, the opportunities, the roadmap, the CEO's vision, down to, you know, the security guard controlling the input, the inflow of people, to know when I have to do something, how does that impact the overall company? And that's productivity.
Yeah.
Things that are today takes weeks, months, years to implement could be down to hours. That's the productivity. So as a CEO, that's how I see them, even at the C-suite, that the CEOs will start having more of a flat organization because the AI agents that are supporting them, that are enabling them, are able to move these conversations faster top down within the organization.
Yeah, I think that's what's really important. So if we stick with the CEO kind of persona for a minute, is that mind shift. Because before it was the CEOs at the top, they make the big decisions, they set the strategy, they set the vision. But with all this additional data and all these agents acting, you know, maybe it's no longer a CEO, it's a chief productivity officer, yeah. Right? Which companies are going to win? It's the ones that design their systems and empower their people. And, you know, you talked about this, Mark, like a traditional metric has been, you know, revenue per employee.
Right.
What if it's productivity per employee?
That's right.
And that becomes the gold standard.
And I'm starting to see that in the valuations as I watch the financials, I watch the stock market a little bit. A company like NVIDIA, I jotted down before the show, they're $3.6 million in revenue per employee per year. Microsoft, $1.5 million. Alphabet, $2.7 million. Amazon, $850,000 per employee. Oracle, $400,000 per employee. Meta, $2.2 million. And the valuations of these companies are tying directly back to these metrics. People are actually driving the value up of their companies by making AI investments. It's yeah. really interesting.
Yeah. It's the ultimate tool that will highlight all the waste that corporate world deals with, right? So I think the productivity per employee is absolutely the tailwind that the AI is going to bring into our
yeah. The employees are such a large percentage of company's expense. Is one of their biggest expenses on their on their P&L is my headcount, right? So if they can minimize that, and you know, you're seeing some companies they're just allowing for attrition, and then you're on Microsoft, I think's laid off 15,000 people in the last couple months.
Yeah. So I look at that a little differently though, because I think there's only one Microsoft, there's only one Google, there's only one Tesla, right? So there are significant other companies that could benefit from the resources that those companies are removing from their headcount. There is knowledge that people gather that they could impact other companies, smaller, mid-size. It's just we have to think about the future of employees differently. I think we have to teach them and we have to empower them. We have to expect things differently. You know, I co-interviewed someone that's looking to get hired at a friend of mine company, and he asked me if I would sit in the interview. And I listened to him ask questions of this individual, very talented engineer, right? And he just asked the normal questions, right? Tell me one time that you had a trouble working with a coworker. What was that and how did you overcome it? We all heard that question, right? You either asked it or you've been asked. And I listened to that, go, these are not the right questions that we should be asking. My question to him was, tell me about the last agent that you used to help you optimize your code and how fast did you bring it?
Yeah.
So it's just a shifting of mindset in everything that we do in regards to how we organize, how we build, how we demand, and ultimately how we expect things to be done. Well, and that's a shift in
mindset. 25% of the open jobs out there right now require AI skills. You must have AI skills for 25% of the open jobs. And we're in the first inning. That's what it is today. What's it going to be, you know, 6 months from now?
Here's the funny part is that most people, right? Most people think AI is a chatbot. We're at pretty early infancy of what AI means to us, you know? So we, even us as thought leaders or pretend that we know everything about AI, right? We don't know anything, right? It's because it's just so early, right? It's no longer as a chatbot. It's no longer just an LLM. It's not just an agent. It's not an AGI. I mean, all these things together really changes how we should be thinking about the future. And I think that's the shift that it's in our face. It's just a matter of, are we going to embrace it and move forward with it?
Well, as I think about, you know, somebody entering the workforce or pivoting in what, you know, one of these Microsoft employees is no longer there that might be looking to figure out how to position themselves. I mean, I think if you can demonstrate how you can save the company money or how you can contribute to the revenue line one way or the other, then there's probably a spot on a team for you. But if you are some of that, let's call it middle management, support admin, that there's going to be very few of those jobs in companies that are really thriving.
That's right.
Imagine, you know, I think the future, you know, it's not an interview, it's a demonstration, mm-hmm. right? You know, where before you look at a resume and then you say, oh, you ask some clever questions. When was your challenge? What's your weakness? You know, all the psychology stuff. I think that's going to go away. And you're going to be expected to show up and say, hey, I looked at your marketing funnel and I tested 3 agents and I got these results. And so let me give you the demonstration, right? No longer this, are you committed? Are you hardworking?
That's right.
What's your work ethic? And let's choose them on the person. It's, again, back to the productivity, it's the performance. And so I think, you know, for me with my daughter who's 14, I'll be encouraging her thinking about your productivity now and thinking about how you're applying this in your whole life. You're not waiting for someone to launch something and tell you what to do. You're thinking about, how do you improve the productivity of your learning experience? How do you improve the productivity of, you know, your entertainment experience, right? And how do you apply this thinking now so that 10 years from now, you know, when you go to get that job, you can demonstrate that to them. You're not waiting for them to ask some questions. You're demonstrating that.
That's right.
And if this sounds scary to people, I would say don't be scared, because I think if you position yourself to be somebody who's in the role of building relationships for your company that have value, if you're good at that, that's what you do, well, then you just need to embrace these tools and they're going to keep you from needing to hire a huge support staff of people. Those relationships and the fact that you've built them and can build them, that's an attribute that I don't see going away anytime soon. I think that attribute, that skill of being a relationship person, those relationships are always going to have value for the company.
Oh yeah, I think the line worker value is even higher in AI than what we actually think. I think the middle manager is in trouble.
Okay. Well, okay, when you say line worker, let's define that a little bit. So when you say that, I think of a factory.
Sure.
And so I think of robots coming and replacing me, and I'm, you know, what do I do in a factory now? What will I do in the factory as the robots tend to show up as well? We become more productive because of the robots, but do I still have a role?
Yeah. I mean, I when you think about the transformation of robotics into our manufacturing, right? What does that mean? We need more power. We need more energy. There needs to be more skilled worker that are doing welding. Mm-hmm. you know, cables need to be ran. cameras need to be installed. I mean, I think, yes, will the line worker in a factory be different? Yes, 100%. It got disrupted when manufacturing turned into conveyor belts, right? So, but what did those employees do? They went and did something else to be more productive, to help the bottom line of the company. I think under this AI, as this wave of change come through, I think the shift is going to be to a lot more value add that requires skilled workers that are different than the people that are just filling up the box or moving things around. Let's make those to happen with robotics, but how do we create the fundamental infrastructure that's needed to make that happen?
And how many trillions are we, I think, committed to invest in the data centers, in the electrical to help drive that? That is, before we even get to the factory itself, it's you got to build out an infrastructure, a highway system, if you will, so that, you know, we can attach the factories to that, attach all this to that. So there's going to be such an economic boom with all of that investment. That's going to be a lot of jobs. So, you know, I think people have to be thinking about how to find where the gold rush is actually happening and position themselves there. So I think you said welder, we were talking about welders. I mean, how many welders and electricians is it going to take just to build out the data centers and the electrical grid? I mean, it's going to be enormous.
Enormous.
Yeah. When you guys are talking, I'm thinking about economic opportunity. Like, where would I build something if I was going to build something for this employee? Mm-hmm. And there's so many people building, you know, the next social media thing just to try to get more dollars and make people more in debt. But why wouldn't I build the next learning system so this person, you know, who maybe doesn't even have a bachelor's degree, is able to learn and develop these skills for the future? And how powerful would that be? And how many people would join that platform? And what value would that create if you were the first mover, you know, to do that?
That's right.
And so many people, I think, are, you know, the line worker, as we're saying to them, you know, they're saying, well, I guess I'll wait for my boss to tell me what I need to do. And I can't afford to go to college, so I'm just kind of stuck. But if you could empower that person, and then you could start empowering all those people, I mean, that's huge economic opportunity.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right. Good. By the way, we do have a portfolio company that's building.
Yeah.
So we're
let's
excited.
Talk about that. What is that portfolio company?
I don't want to take away from, they haven't announced their strategy, but I think it's really exciting to see how they're thinking about AI as your scale-up agent to help you from high school, right? Having this agent that lives with you at an early age and walks through your career path to not only help you upskill your knowledge, your skill set, and direct you into where's your next opportunity? Where's your growth strategy, right? That's a really exciting platform that they're building, and we're excited to bring it to market.
It's exciting. Well, I think that a lot of the friction has been lessened over the last couple of months with this, what some people call the big, beautiful bill. It's a big bill, and it was signed July 4th. And you look at the tax incentives where you can accelerate depreciation by building a factory or by CapEx spending. And that wave has begun. It is starting right now. And I think the productivity gains have started to show up as well when you start talking about, we had a surplus, I think, last month, surprised everybody. We had a federal surplus at the national level. We made money last month, which is, I think, shocked everybody. And we'll see how that continues and whether that works. But it's, I think we're at the very beginning stages of this. So thoughts on startups. Okay, so we live in this world of startups, which we've talked a little bit about. And so building AI from the ground up, has there ever been a better time to build a startup? Because you really, I mean, one of the hangups with startups is you got to hire employees and you don't have any money to hire employees. Now you do it with agents, right? You need less people at the beginning when money is really, really tight.
I mean, yes. It's we're seeing it every day. I mean, I've lived it myself, as you know, personally, right? I mean, over the last few years, as we're building Create, and ultimately what we're trying to think about how what we're doing with Fund 2, with Growth Factory, and every other company that would be part of this, AI becomes like your best tool to take advantage of the limited resources that you said. And in a one way that I think most of the startups are using or should use AI beyond the coding, it's more about validation. I think AI could become the best friend to startups for validation. If you can create a simulation of your opportunity and test it and iterate and test, and you could do it inside of this ecosystem without having to spend the traditional capital required to validate your product, that's a huge win, right? I mean, entrepreneurs should be excited about this opportunity to dive in and leverage this. And I know they are, because that's just how the future of startups should be. AI first. First principles. If you didn't fill out your filing with the state of Delaware for your entity, and you did not use an AI to do that on your behalf, you already missed the point.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, the mindset, the shifting the mindset from, yes, you're using AI, but we've talked, you know, startups have been doing this kind of lean startup model for, you know, decades now. Where it's, oh, you build an MVP, a minimum viable product, you go out, you get feedback, you know, you see if you can get first customers, and then, you know, you continue to iterate or you pivot, right, and you scale. But to what Ali's saying, I think really now you get a minimum viable audience. You know, instead of the viable, you know, you build a product and try to find the business, you find the business, and then you build a product for that audience. Right. And that's where these AI tools, to his point, you know, are so powerful, because, you know, before it's like, oh, I have to build a website. That's going to cost me $20,000, right? Yeah. No. Oh, I have to do a marketing campaign and I have to do ads and all these things. No. Like, oh, I have to design, you know, a cool commercial, right?
No.
Yeah. That I have to hire a production team. I have to hire actors and all these things. No. Right. And so you can now imagine how you could create, you know, three different product campaigns, right? And say, hey, I want to test these three. I want to go after a marketing type product, but I have three hypotheses. Now I can test all three of those hypotheses at the same time.
That's right.
Not just, I need $1 million to test one, and if that's wrong, I'll give me another $1 million and I'll pivot to the other one. No, I tested three, and this is the one that performed the best. So invest, I've already de-risked it for you, right? And that is going to take time, but what I'm excited about, what we're building and how we're structuring it, is not only just with investing in founders that understand and believe in that model, but the venture studio and how we can build those systems to demonstrate to investors that that is the future.
Interesting. So how do you, I mean, maybe we can go into a little bit more specifics on that. We are in the process of developing a venture studio, but which is going to be AI-fueled, driven by AI. So maybe talk a little bit about that, but also just from an investment strategy, using AI to make better decisions and engineer more wins for our portfolio companies. Maybe we can talk about how that works and how it maybe even is working at some level today.
Yeah, I think, and I'll let Ali cover this, but we're thinking about it as in two kind of ways. One is the venture operating system, right? The future of venture is going to have an operating system that's powered by AI, but changes the way venture is done. And we talked about this last episode where I said, you know, I think the best venture capitalists in the future are the ones that are most agile, not the best pickers, right? Not the best ones that can predict like it has been. And then there's this kind of venture science thinking, right? So taking out the gut and using the data, and how is that data structured so that we can make data driven decisions. And how do we, you know, if we have all these tools and we have better data, how are we being systematic with that data? And so maybe you want to start with the Venture OS and why it's not just, you know, a buzzword or like some kind of hype word,
yeah,
but why we're thinking about how this is the foundation of our future. And yes, it's powered by AI, but it creates a system for better results.
Yeah, I mean, I think eating our own dog food, right? We're talking about AI changing the structure of the future of how companies operate or how startups build. I believe the same thing goes to how venture operates in the future. We have to understand it from a principle level of how are we going to operate venture in the world of AI. And when we're thinking about venture OS as a fundamental principle in our as how we operate, we're not talking about tools. We're not talking about a product that is an input and an output, right? Today, we may use AI to say, go do a research and give me back the paper. And I'm going to read the paper and then I'm going to say, is this right or not? And I'm going to give the paper to someone else to read, go, is this right or not, right? That's how we utilize tools today, right? When we're thinking about Venture OS, it's about how do we fundamentally think about the future of venture operating with an AI as its best toolkit, as its best assistant, as a best companion in how we not only engage at a very early stage of, you know, discovery with our founders, with our ideas, with potential problems that we have to solve. And how do you truly work through the extraction of the actual real information, the validation of that data, the predictability of how would it work in the future of world that we're going to live in with AI? And then how do you think about the rest of the ecosystem of a startup from building, scaling, growing, and then ultimately exiting, right? We have to have a fundamental platform that enables us to run our business on it. And that's what we call Venture OS, where every piece of information is understood, every piece of information is validated, every piece of information or interaction is recorded. So we could have a loopback system. We could have a trend. We could look back and say, where did we do right? Where did we do wrong? Not based on a gut feel, not based on Excel spreadsheet, right? It's a different way of looking at this. In my opinion, once this is built and it's done, and you know we're making an attempt at it, I'm sure others are thinking about this. When this system is now become the principal operating system of a venture, it removes these siloed environment of a CRM, of an inbox, of an email, your email campaign tool, your social media. Today, we do a lot of heavy lifting to connect all this stuff together. And end of the day, we're still not satisfied because they're not truly connected, because the connection between these systems were not organic. They were forced. There's middle layer software sitting between these environments trying to talk. But when we think about changing it from a fundamental and building it from ground up and you operating on top of it, it's no longer about these siloed solutions. It's about a connected environment that you truly could build. And then when we are thinking about this and understanding what is our playbook, that's where the venture science comes in, to really think about this from a scientific way of how do you measure things? How do you assess things? You know, when scientists look to bring, and do their experiment, they don't go, oh, that looks red, or that meets my, you know. No, they scientifically measure things and adjust and understand. So we want to do the same thing. Because if we don't, as a venture, we will never compete in the marketplace, because the startups that we have to invest in and support and nurture, they're using AI and they're going to be far ahead of us. And we will never be able to do diligence on them. We will never be able to understand what they're actually doing, because that's just not the way the future going to be. And we need to be prepared for it. So I'm looking forward to building what we believe is the future of how we should be operating as a venture.
Now, where's the talent at? You know, because it's interesting that we get these schools of, you know, people coming up and getting educated in this realm, and the right players or the right skill sets are getting gobbled up. I saw, you know, Facebook offering huge signing bonus, or Meta offering huge signing bonuses for certain types of talent. What kind of talent is in the highest demand, and what talent at the tech level is pretty much obsolete or becoming obsolete?
Well, I think it's changing, right? So, you know, I think that there used to be, they call it like the 10X engineer, right? Like the superhuman engineer that stood above all the rest, right? And what we're talking about AI, that's empowering the average one to become that 10X one. And so then it's like, okay, well, you know, does the 10X one, what do they do, right? And they're still valuable, obviously.
That's right.
They're still unique. But that you have to reapply that skill because now you've leveled up the rest.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I think, yes, today, if we're sitting here and thinking July 2025, there's a talent that is, you know, in high demand, right? And maybe limited talent. I always think about, okay, but what about 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? How do we prepare for the future, right? Because we can get through this, but if we don't prepare for 3 years from now, then, you know, we're really screwed. And so we were just talking to one of our partners, William Jessup University, this week about this problem and how they're, you know, a higher education university rethinking what higher education means. And from like, hey, we should be inviting high school kids on campus to do hackathons and to learn these skills and to immerse themselves. And we have to rethink the student experience. You know, they're in Rockland, so there's not, you know, beaches and, you know, it's not a party school.
They don't have a big football team.
Yeah, yeah. So they can't, you know, promote that. But what if, you know, if a student left and said, hey, I built three businesses during my university stay here, you know, how would that attract the next student, right? And so, you know, I think there are challenges today, but, you know, I hope we're thinking about 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now, because that's what's going to determine if we build the future that we're trying to build.
I would just add, I think there's an inflection point right now, right? The type of resources that any company needs to help them with the transformation is limited, no question. Because even those highly skilled engineers and builders and designers, they themselves are trying to figure out how this becomes part of their skill set, right? You know, inside of Create, I know that pretty much every engineer has adopted a different, you know, AI toolkit to help them. At some point, the consolidate go, this is how we're going to do it, right? So they're, even those very highly skilled ones are trying to figure this out. But to your point, I think we really need to think about education differently for the future. And not just at the higher education, we need to think about from just at middle school and high school in how we teach these AI trades as your everyday way of doing, running your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the kids are, you know, incredibly smart. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough, my sister's boys, you know, I watch them and I mean, the things that they do is just incredible, right? And I believe they're seeking this change. And if we could teach them, we can educate them why this is important. That's where we should start, because they become the suppliers of the talent that we need in the future. And what if the 9-year-old turning 14 and 15 has enough knowledge to compete with a 21-year-old college graduate 4 to 5 years from now?
Yeah, it's impressive to think about what's possible in terms of not only those people landing good jobs, but they could start businesses.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, just to not to go too down the rabbit hole here, but it's like, one of my sister's boys, he sent me a text and he said, can you help me start a business? And he went on into three different tools and created a water bottle, complete logo, complete go-to-market messaging and strategy. Really impressive.
Yeah.
Right?
How old is he?
He's 12.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very impressive.
Just unbelievable, right? So, and it was not just a half-baked idea. He used these tools appropriately to create an entire go-to-market strategy of an idea that he had.
Yeah. And with these tools being somewhat at our fingertips, you can just let your imagination run wild and the coolest ideas are going to surface just by that amount of, our mind working on the imagination. Because I think, especially for young people, you know, you get to be my age, your imagination has probably dried up at some level. And, the imagination of a youngster is far superior to those that get really set in their ways over the years. So
your imagination is dried up.
No. I think they just don't have any limitation. Yeah. See, as we go through our journey, you know, we start building these limitations, right? Financial.
What really
family.
Changes, right, is like our tolerance to risk. When we're when we're kids, you know, yes, maybe it seems like imagination, but it's like, no, we don't have fear, right? And then we get older and we have responsibility and things and we just create more fear. And so I think, you know, this is another example of like how AI can be applied where you can test things, you can explore but you can do it in controlled environments and safer environments where you don't risk your assets and your relationships that you're worried about as an adult. And now adults can be kids longer. They can explore, they can, you know, tap that imagination. Right. And so those are the kind of things that people don't talk about, right? Is like what would that do, right?
That's right.
What would that create, and how does that change, you know, not just the economic drivers of creating businesses, but how does that change your relationship with your grandkids, your friends, your community? How does it help you drive impact in things that you're looking to drive beyond business, right? There's so much opportunity.
Well, every time you not every time, but a lot of the times when you turn on a show that's talking about AI, they always want to bring up the downside of AI. And, the three of us don't spend really any time thinking about that stuff. But just for our audience who might be, well, what about this and what about that? Is there anything that concerns you guys about AI?
I think I'm not worried about the robot overlord, you know, kind of imagery that most people play. The thing that I don't know if it concerns me yet, but I wonder about is as AI helps us become even more comfortable, right? It automates things. It helps us do less things here. And, you know, we have a personal assistant robot at the house, right? So, you know, we already have dishwashers and washing machines and Roombas. You know, but now we have a robot that follows us around and folds our clothes and does even more for us. And we have agents that are doing this and that. How does that affect our purpose and our drive?
I wonder if that gives us more time to go out and walk on the dirt and become grounded with nature and things that maybe really we're probably meant to do. Going back to caveman
it does
days.
And so that's the thing though, it does give us that more time, but you have to have the mindset, right? Because there's going to be all these other tools that want to try to suck you in, right? And so washing machines and dishwashers, all the things I mentioned, they gave us plenty of time. What do? We stare at our phones.
Yeah, the fun of locking yourself in a room and play video games.
Yeah, come we on, play video games and we watch more TV. Yeah. And we spend more time as zombies, you know, scrolling. Yeah.
There's some really cool stuff out there that can really
so we're going to have more
addictive.
Time to do those things, or are we going
to set
the stage for, no, we need to connect with nature. We need to protect nature. We need to, you know, spend more time with relationships, right? And so I don't hear enough talk about that. So that's why I don't say I'm concerned today, that I'm fearful, but I wonder who's going to set that trend and say, hey, with the 10 hours a week that you get, you know, from AI, that you're no longer doing these things, how will you invest that time?
Yeah. And us as parents, I'm a grandparent, is like, I think for me, I feel this responsibility to demonstrate that, to, you know, lead by example, if you will. I better go outside and get dirty. You know, I'm now coaching football again. And so it's like, I got to do that stuff because that's really more important than all this cool technology that we're talking about, which is really, really important for all these reasons that we're talking about. But nothing drives, I guess, contentment like some of these very basic things, and happiness, like these very basic things about, does my family love me? And, you know,
well, you're the best, I think, evangelist of this, Mark, which is, what's your life's purpose? If you don't start with that, you don't have an anchor, you don't have a foundation. And that's where I think, you know, people have to talk more about that, where it's easy to see like, oh, our life's going to be so easy with technology and all these great things. But if we lose sight of, yeah, but does the average person have a life's purpose? And if they don't, where's our society going, right? And so
sounds like a business. If we could create a business around creating our life's purpose, you know, it'd probably fly off the shelf.
I love it.
I would just say on a fear question, right? I agree. I think we have to go, what is our purpose, and leverage that in balancing how much technology is going to enable us to do what we want to do. But I do have, my fear is that with any technology, there's bad actors. We know that, right? And AI is going to 10x bad actors' ability to do bad things. So I think we as entrepreneurs, we as people that are guiding some of these next generation of entrepreneurs, we have to start thinking about how do we ensure that the audience understand the truth versus the bad. I don't mean bad, maybe I used the wrong word, but it's what is truth and what's authentic and what is not. What is fake? Because it's easy to get people to buy into fake things. And they're really good people. There's really good fakers that are making really good fakes. And
We've seen fears cause people to really take a side on things, you know, over the last several years. And the creation of fear really draws people together.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like I go back to, you know, the crypto world, right? When cryptocurrency and blockchain came out, fantastic technology. From a technology perspective, fantastic. Unfortunately, the first wave of those who took advantage of the technology was for the wrong reasons. And I think cryptocurrency and blockchain got a black eye because of that. AI has been able to avoid that for now, right? Because AI was brought to us with people that didn't speak different language crypto did, right? There was a kind of like this bro mentality around crypto where AI didn't have that when it came to surface. But the AI as a fundamental technology is much more powerful than the crypto world is, or the crypto technology. And we need to make sure that we protect people from those who are going to take advantage of this to create, you know, opportunity to harm others in many different ways, right? Simple, you know, white collar crime all the way to, you know, chemical warfare, right? That, I think there are people that are talking about it. I believe there are activities around the world to surface this on how to at least make people aware. You know, was it today or yesterday? I know that the administration signed deregulation on the AI, and I actually support it because it's too new. We have to let this technology develop and mature. But at the same time, we have to be responsible, you know, and responsibility starts with us when we are seeing opportunities and we want to go in and support it. We want to make sure that there is nothing in there as part of the fabric that could do harm and mislead or misrepresent. And I'll finish by saying that is so that in itself is so important for us to also have AI tools that is able to validate what we're looking at, because we could be duped and given data or information that is not accurate, and we need to have a way to better understand.
And I think this point is incredibly important, not only for building a future that's safe, yeah, right, and not letting these tools, you know, create more misinformation and more dissension and more separation, but also how we think about this as the opportunity, right? Like, you know, I think the session we're at is like, oh, the future, you're at your company, you're going to have an AI referee, right? That someone who's making sure that, right, you know, all these tools are not creating issues. And you're going to need people that are thinking about AI, how it's being used responsibly, right? And so we can, the fear piece can make us sit around and debate versus, no, it's we can all agree that this future is coming. We can all agree there's risk. Let's take action and start building those jobs, start building those tools to help those people, right? Let's do that. Instead of waiting and saying, oh, look at this big crisis that happened in these areas, and now let's be reactive to that. No, let's be proactive. Right. Let's build the future. And so that's where I hope we can move from fear to future. Right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about our next show for a second. We've decided we're going to do some of these shows. People are saying they want to understand more about AI specifically, but you brought up crypto with the legislations that's passed for stablecoins. That's a really interesting aspect that ties somewhat to our world as well. But what do we want to talk about on the next show? Because there will be, this stuff is changing so fast. There will be events that happen that are newsworthy, and we can inform our audience where they may not be digesting this stuff with their normal, just by turning on CNN or Fox, you're not getting this kind of information. What should we be diving into deeper? What else should we be covering over our next few shows?
Yeah, I mean, what came to mind as we talked today, because we talked about, okay, what's the role of the CEO? What about line workers? We talked about education. You know, but I know a lot of, you know, the people that follow your show, Mark, are, you know, investors, angel investors, individual investors. And I don't think we've touched on that, not just on do you bet on AI or do you not bet on AI, but, you know, let's take real estate, right? Like, I'm not a big real estate investor. You know, I know you are, Mark, and you sold a business in that space, so you guys have better knowledge. But I think real estate, as one example, as an investor, most people, it's been, oh, I have knowledge and I have access. But can the average person come in and take and beat you now in knowledge and access? How will they beat you, right? And so, and that's just one example of a one asset class, real estate, right? What if we apply that to the other asset classes? I think that would be really interesting to the audience, is to say, you know, what if you're, whether you're an experienced investor, what should you be doing? Or whether you're an aspiring investor, what should you be doing? Or you're somewhere in the middle, how do you take these tools and how do you apply that to get better outcomes?
Yeah, I think that'd be a great topic. We can dive deep into that. Maybe some other, Ali.
I think that's a great next for the next episode. I think that's a great topic
that's
for us.
Great.
So deep dive.
So follow us, subscribe. More of these type of shows are coming. Rick and Ali have got a wealth of knowledge that did not come out today. We also have friends that have tremendous knowledge in specific areas like real estate potentially or other investing. So I'm going to suggest that maybe we bring some of those industry partners on board and provide a more sector by sector's perspective to what we're doing and how it's shaping my thesis on this productivity revolution and how that really is really our hope is to sell our way out of this thing. So
you're going to have to change your tagline, igniting the productivity revolution.
I love it. All right. That's going to be a wrap. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And as always, we're always by your side. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, at Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.